Well, we're back here for another episode of Pipe Dreams Podcast. We're back at Chuckwalla after we took a little field trip to see Uncle Jimmy down in Florida.
Mikasa?
Yeah, we're back here. We got kind of our last weekend out in the desert because it's starting to get a little bit too hot out here. I was talking about today, it's kind of like they do a summer winter out here.
Yeah.
So things are starting to get ready to the point where we're going to shut down. But yeah, pumped to have a good week. It's going to be a busy one. We got SoCal track days this weekend and then going to CVMA racing next weekend. Got Jimmy out here. He's doing some coaching, and then he's going to got a big photo shoot coming up, right?
Big shoot next week. Shoot, I don't know if I can talk about it, but I mean, I guess on NDA, whatever, dude. It's not a big deal, but I mean, just gotta get on the big bird and do a couple flicks. No big deal. Yeah. But model life.
We've got two guests. I know it wasn't supposed to be two, but yeah. We got two this weekend, which is really cool. We got somebody very special coming tomorrow, but. Today we happened to get somebody else on the line. It was he's been racing a world superbike for quite a while, right?
I don't even know.
They wanted me to go fully into it. I can't do it. They wanted me to go down the whole factory Kawasaki, the whole deal.
I had that today already.
Really?
Yeah. It's funny.
Couldn't do it. We're very lucky to be here. James Spoley, obviously my co-host. Sam Lowe's came over. What are you doing here? Why are you in the middle of the desert?
Playing some golf. I got some coaching today off this guy.
I heard it went really well.
Yeah, really well.
Hopefully you didn't get any coaching from these guys over here.
Well, they were pushing me around a little bit today, but it was all right.
Simon, show you how to get a knee down.
No, he's really good on the sliders. Keeping saving them. I think he has to pay for them.
I already got a deal on those things. Like he's got a factory.
But I actually learned today they're pucks, aren't they? You guys call them pucks. I got it wrong. It's not sliders.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. So you've been out here with Jason Pridmore.
Yeah, Jason Pridmore, JP. I've been out here since straight from Argentina race last weekend, playing some golf, chilling with him, and over here today with the guys. And no, it was nice. I've never been here. It's new for me. And spun a few laps this afternoon trying to pass this guy. It was funny, so it was nice.
I heard about that. How'd that go?
Yeah, fan club in turn seven. Loved it.
No, I've never been here. I just spun a few laps in the first lap. I was like, whoa. Got a little bit wrong anyway.
It's hard because all the turns start to look like each other out here, don't they, a bit? You go into one, you're like, I think I'm in a different one.
I thought I was sound, and I was like, oh, no. I need to be a bit slower than that. I'm not ready to be going that fast. Yeah. No, it was good. Really good fun. It's nice. It's a great setup you got here, and... Yeah, that was nice. I'll definitely come back.
That's awesome. What? How'd you get linked up with JP?
So actually, through my brother Jason and Alex must have hooked up a good few years ago now. And then we've all just been friends. Obviously, I love golf. JP loves golf. And then for a passion of golf and racing, always stay in touch. Always speak a lot over the season and always hook up when we can when everyone's schedule allows. So Jason's coming over in the summer, English summer, so it's not so hot to play some golf. And yeah, we just always stay in touch.
That's awesome.
What kind of, so how long have you been playing golf?
Long time. I should be better than I am, but yeah, 4 or 5 years. And when I was younger, a little bit, last 4 or 5 years, been playing a bit more.
I say the same thing to everybody I meet, but I've been playing. I played one round like last week,
yeah,
first time ever.
This guy turned up yesterday. Oh, don't play. First hole, just straight down the middle. So
no, the first hole, I bended pretty far right. But
I was trying to do you a solid. Yeah, dude. No one was there. No one was there. I was trying to do him a solid.
Everybody, just check out his hat, dude. It's a new sponsor, the Plantation.
It's starting to grow a bit. That's
man.
It's all the Top Golf we've been doing, me and him. Yeah.
Mate, so this place we played, though, was phenomenal. It's probably the best place I've ever played. So I land and I'm just expecting that I'm gonna just drive straight to the track and whatnot. And Jay goes, "Hey man, just get here wherever you can." And I'm like, you know, typical Jay. I'm like, oh, man, all right. There's a rental car. It's like booked. And I'm like, all right. I'm just driving there. I'm like, I wanted to get some food and whatnot. And I roll up into this place and it's just like, just the most expensive cars I've seen and whatnot. And I roll in, like, they got a shirt ready for me, and we roll into this nice place, and I meet this guy, Dickie, and his buddy, and Sam, and these guys are all like, all right, we're going to first tee, and I'm just like, Jay, man, I'm so nervous, dude, I'm super, he goes, no, just have fun, and I'm like, he pipes it, gone.
We've done a one round already. Was into round two that day.
Mate, they all pipe it. So I'm sat up there. I'm like fucking shaking. I swing it back. It just bends it so far, right? And Dickie goes, "All right, mate, we got to play in 3.5 hours." Yeah. I'm like, fuck, dude.
The only rule is it's 3.5 hour round. Yeah, you're like, sound.
Guys, it was funny though. But yeah, we just played that crazy course, and
He was a good dude as well, the guy. Full of life. He's like 68, like smashing it around. It's nice. Mm. Good to see.
He chiefing on a few stogs.
He set fire to a tree a few months back there. He put one down and played a few holes, looked back, the thing's on fire. Like, yeah.
Dude, it was such a cool experience, you know, and all that. But you said you've been off on golf, though, for a bit. You had a bit of a shoulder injury?
Yeah, I had a few crashes, and so then my shoulder last year, did my shoulder, and I couldn't play, so I've not played that much. But I love golf. So different to racing, but I really love it and try and play as much as I can. So JP's actually been salty all day today, and he had a bad finish to the round yesterday. That's why he's gone to bed early tonight.
Sounds a couple about of right.
He was on one, though. He was on one. He eagled, and he was playing so good.
Real low.
Right? Yeah.
I think he just let it slide. I think he had like a 4-second lead. His tires went off.
Yeah. Did he snap a club over his knee or no?
No, he held it together well, but I think he was not happy about it. But he's good. He plays so good, doesn't he?
I can imagine that. That's funny. Who's better, you or your brother?
Me.
Are you just saying
what
that?
What? Just live.
I love how quick that was. That was so good.
You probably get that question
I was
all
first,
the time.
So like, he's like me, just like, if they just did like a copy of me with him, so it's not quite as good. You know, like when you get a DVD and you copy it, it's like, it's not quite as good.
It's still the burnt version?
Yeah, it's a burnt version. He's like buffering sometimes to catch up. And what's That's good, funny. Me and Alex were the same at everything. We're just real close, but it would be nice to ride against each other again soon, because it's been years since we've really properly rode together on the track.
When's the last time? Was BSB or like way back?
Yeah, like 2010, I guess, in British Supersport. But I had like great team, great bike, but Evan, he was just like standing in some replacement ride, so it was not a fair test. I won, but it was not a fair test. if it would have been, I'd have still beat him, but I'm going to... like.
Well, who were you riding for at the time?
GNS Racing. I remember at Croft, when he jumped on a Yamaha for Seaton, Phil Seaton, the guy's called Seaton Yamaha, and he was doing a few stands. Do you remember that year? It was when, remember there's that big ash cloud thing in Europe and no one could fly and stuff, and the guy was coming over from like Sweden or somewhere and he couldn't get there, so Alex stood in to ride for the bloke. And in qualifying, he was behind me, so I was going good. I was like doing a full season, so I was up to speed. So I said, come bro, get behind me. Did like, came in and looked at the screen and it said lows, and I was like, oh, mega. And I looked again, I thought, fuck, he's in front of me. I had to get back out. I was like, well, I went down, I crashed, but I got pole, but I was like, I'm not having that. I've towed him around.
Yeah.
But now we're always competitive. But it would be nice. It would be nice to ride.
You guys always been competitive growing up?
We're really, really competitive, but then like, I really want to see him do good. We're real close, like strangely close, but I suppose we do everything the same. We love racing, love golf, families and stuff. So we're so the same person. It's strange, really. It's hard for me because obviously I've always had a twin, so it's hard for me to think about it without. But competitive. Want to beat each other, but I still want to see him do well.
I think that would be so cool to see you guys back racing against each other on like either the same equipment or
imagine us as teammates.
It'd be sick.
I talk about that all the time, like Hunter and Jet in Supercross.
Yeah.
Like the fact that they're like their win tallies are exactly the same right now. Like just to be in that. That level of a sport and be teammates is like, that's the coolest part, I think, is like,
it's so cool. And then like, but what's crazy is they don't have the East West come together anymore.
Well, they're doing the super whatever they motocross. Call it now. Super, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, but
they're going to do something. At the end of the year, I think.
That's going to be sick. I mean, if I was a betting man, who would you bet?
Jet.
Yeah, I think you got to.
You think so?
I think you just got to. But I feel like Hunter's, I mean, he's just...
Both great, aren't they?
Yeah.
I feel like I could see Jet like getting in his head a bit and like doing something stupid, and Hunter will just come back by him. And
yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
That'd be me and Al. I'd wind him up. I'd rev him up, and then he'd...
Is that how it goes? You're a little bit
he'd
more...
He'd try and ride through me to win and like make a mistake, and I just like go across the line.
That's funny. What was it like? I mean, I know literally nothing about you guys as a from a background perspective. What was it like? Like growing up, getting into racing as a brother, how did that all come together?
So we had a bit of a different route to a lot, especially the guys I'm racing against now. We did motocross till we were 11, 12 years old, something like that, and then went road racing. And obviously we all know the financial demands on racing are difficult, aren't they? So we was doing like the thing called Super Teens in England, like a Aprilia 125 series. Did that for a few years and then on to 125, like GP 125s, but just in England. And did that then when we were 16 already, moved on to British Supersport. So we had Honda 600s, but just in our own team at home. And yeah, it was quite difficult really, because then the class was a bit different to now. Like now they're quite controlled in England. The rules are still difficult, but controlled then it was quite open. So you could spend literally anything with the tyres, with the bikes and everything. And yeah, we didn't really, 16, 17, 18, we did that. Didn't really do that much. It was getting quite hard for the family. And then it would have been 2000 and... what would it be? End of 2009. Alex didn't really have a ride. We had some the bikes that we used that year, and I said to my dad, I want to try on a proper bike with a proper team and see how I get on. Mm. And if I can't do it, like stop and do something else. I was both working for my dad at the time, he's an electrician. So we sold all the bikes. I had about, I think it was like 13 grand or 14 grand, something like that. And I did this deal. I can't really call it a deal, but agreed to ride for a team in British Supersport. I think it was 30 grand. It was 30 grand we had to pay for this ride. And my dad said, okay, you can have this money from the year before, but what are you going to do when you need to pay the rest? I said, I don't know. I said, I want to try on a good bike, proper team, some testing, like understand, before it's just been the family team. I want to understand if I could do it or not, or how good I really am or I'm not. Dad's like, fair enough, but. You know, I said, well, I'll try and get some sponsors and see, but at least I'll do a few. No, I've already paid half. So like, if I, you know, I'm going to like get a few races in, and then I realise I've not got the rest. And then if I'm not doing any good, I'll just stop. He's like, are you crazy? But okay. I found a little bit money, a few more grand. And then I think I won three of the first four races. The guy never asked for any more money and then won the championship. So it's good. And the year after I was in World Supersport. Wow. So yeah, I was quite lucky really. If that could have gone very different.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
And Alex was not... didn't have at the time. He was like riding standing rides and not doing too much. And then he rode for a Honda team, got like a bit of a break, that WFR team. Do you remember that, James?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and then he rode for Honda and got ride for Honda.
I think, I don't know which one of you, the first time I remember seeing you was at it was a Brands Hatch. I was actually watching with JP at his house. And I remember seeing it was when the Evo class was there. I don't know.
It was in the wet. Yeah.
Was that when...
That was 11. Yeah, that was like he got a ride with that team when he wasn't really riding much.
That was crazy because I remember watching that and we always used to sit and watch British because that was somewhere where I would wanted to go. Yeah. And I remember and I was like, who is this guy? And
it's crazy.
Like, yeah, dude, that's crazy year. And it was wet too. I think Sealy was doing really well. He was on what Tyco is now or something.
Yeah, Relentless, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Relentless.
Yeah. Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah. So it was a bit of a strange time really for us. And then... yeah, just both sort of got, yeah, I'll say lucky because it is, isn't it, in racing, got the opportunities, but then we did well from it. But that was good good fun them times.
When you were growing up, do you think, was there ever moments where it felt like your parents kind of had to choose which one they thought maybe had a better trajectory?
Not really. No, we were lucky with that. We, they did everything they could for us. And then at one point it was like, this is what we got left. And it's expensive, isn't it? So we were working and we said, look, one or two more years, and then if it goes one way or the other, you'll have to stop or find more external sponsors and try and do it. But no, they were even with both of us.
Yeah.
They obviously knew I was better than Al. I don't think they said it. I think they love us both the same. No, awesome. it was. They were great. It's difficult, isn't it? It's difficult, and we two was even worse. But it was it was good. It was good fun. We learned a lot about each other.
I think like I always wonder that, you know, like it's hard enough for a family with one athlete of any sport, but especially racing because it's so expensive. But then you see like the Marquez brothers, right? Like another example of just like how much money was spent between the two of those guys. And obviously, you know, Mark has helped, I think, a little bit with Alex get further along and whatnot. But for sure, like just as a childhood growing up, like as parents, I can't imagine.
But for me, from that side, obviously, it's more difficult for the family, for the funds. But on the flip side, like there's so much advantages because every time I was riding, I had somebody push me or me to push him or together. So there was a lot of positives to it as well. Like you was riding, you never had to like ride alone or see where he was at. It was always pushing each other. And I think that's helped us a lot in our career. Still now we do a lot together. And it's nice also, I can call him anytime. We're so close to talk to somebody that I can obviously say anything to because we're so close about my life, but talk about the racing and someone that actually understands exactly what you're going through. Obviously all the people close to you do, but to have that extra person is real nice.
Yeah. And you got an ultimate filling guy. I mean, someone's had to have asked somewhere. Have you guys ever filled in for each other ever?
Not on track. Okay. I've done medical, done a couple of medical. Alex did a medical for me in 2011.
Can you say this?
11 or 12. Well, it's done, isn't it? We're doing everything now, are they? Right. So 2011 in Monza, and I broke my collarbone in Assen a couple of weeks before. I had a big crash in... We went to three at Aston. I was inside a Chaz on the massive crash. KO. Broke my collarbone, and it was 2 or 3 weeks later. It was Monza. So Monza's not the hardest track, it was straight. So I said, I'll try and ride, and it felt not too bad. I said, Alex, go and do the medical. So I broke my right collarbone. Right. So he walks into the medical like this, holding the left one. And then the doctor goes, right collarbone. He's like, like this. And they said, oh, can you, you know, you need to do 10 press ups. So obviously, it should have been like, it just got down there, boom, 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 boom. Oh, yeah, yeah, it looks all right. Like,
what, no scar or nothing?
No, yeah. I didn't have the op, that's what I didn't have the op. So he was like, oh, yeah, swelling's gone. Like, no, bruising's gone. Oh, yeah, yeah, I didn't stay along the bruising. It's crazy. Then I did the race. So that was the only time, really. That's a little crazy. Bit when we've met occasionally when we was younger with some women trying to jump. But...
you all switcheroo.
We tried. No. We tried.
That's crazy.
I've got a better taste in women than Alex, so he struggled there. He would argue that was the opposite way around. But.
That's funny. Yeah, I would imagine it'd be pretty funny to like show up to a race. I mean, we always talk about it with James and one of our guys, Phelan. You know, they're about the same size and whatnot. And it'd be pretty good, like especially club racing. You know, just have them get on Phelan's bike and go out in the amateur class.
If we had was like training somewhere and we were to do it, I'd definitely try and ride his bike.
It'd be so sweet.
But the best one is when I go to watch his races or he comes to watch mine. And like literally, I'm watching him. I'm on track. And I've got the timing on my phone, watching him. And
people look at you like,
"Yeah, on track." And I'm like, "He's gone by. Oh yeah, not bad." And then Blake will go, "Oh yeah, Alex, good luck this weekend." I'm like,
"Yeah, but yeah,
it's nice, mate. So like, sound." Can I have a picture? I'm like, "Yeah, yeah." It's like, "Oh, how was the session?" I'm like, "Well, he's still going." Like, but it's nice anyway. It's a compliment. It's always nice when someone says me or him. Is it? But sometimes I think, well, yeah.
Is there a way you can tell each other apart? Like,
yeah, I'd say it's about 0.3 a lap.
No,
Alex has got a bit of a scar here. I hit him with a trophy when he was younger, so he's got a scar here on his eye, and he's a little bit taller and looks a bit skinnier. He's not, he just looks it. he's about 4 or 5, he's quite a bit taller if we stood next to each other. When we was younger, we just looked exactly the same. When I look at pictures, I'm like, I don't know.
Dude, I don't I gotta be honest, like, I would... For the longest time, and I mean, I still don't think I can tell you apart.
But on it, like, I could go to his race now, put his kit on, like, put the monster cap down, and like, not say too much to the people, and they wouldn't know.
Yeah, no, doubt it.
Because I don't see you that much. Like, in my team's a bit different because obviously my wife's in the team, so she knows. Yeah. So like, maybe the team would know. But I could definitely go. I might try it one of the races.
It'd be amazing.
Get on the old Cowie. We're at a Cowie today, so anyway, I'm halfway there. Yeah, missed Apex is on that. It'd be the same as him. So we sound.
Could that's you funny. Imagine imagine if there was like a race on April Fool's and you just did that as a like you just walked out, literally just walked
imagine
out,
go out,
yo, fist bump,
took the front, snap it. April Fool's guys, not even me. I'd love funny. To honestly that Kawasaki, about, I'd love
you know
to ride
be
it.
Hilarious. I know we gotta get off this, but if you literally jump on the bike, roll out, he walks in with his leathers,
yeah, then like
what the fuck just happened?
Yeah. When like you first joined this team or when we first join new teams, is always terrible. Like after a few years, they get into it, but straight away, they're like, got no idea what's happening. They're like, they look at you like you're a weirdo. You're like,
do you find it, have you found it hard throughout your career to kind of create your own identity in terms of like branding or just like fan base wise?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Obviously, we have a lot of the same fans, I guess. And honestly, like we're two different people, but very similar. So it's even, I've not really had that feeling. And we sort of do a lot of things together. And honestly, if I'm walking through someone and someone says Alex, I turn around anyway. I'm like, it's like I've got two names. And it's the same for him. So you just get that used to it. But I don't know, we've done good. We didn't want to race against each other. We made a few at that early age when we both started being professional, let's say, or getting proper rides. I sort of went the Grand Prix route, he went Superbike route, and we sort of, not really on purpose to start with. Then after some time, we sort of kept it like that. It worked quite good. So there's different in that sense, but yeah, we're too similar to create a real difference, and we're so close. Yeah. Like we do everything together, we talk all the time, so it's not really. I'm happy to be associated with him. Obviously.
Sure.
Do you think you guys would have changed? Would you have rather have gone Superbike, or do you like the route you've went, or vice versa?
Well, in 2013, when I won the championship in Supersport, I had a contract to go Superbike, but the team changed to MV. Was on Yamahas and they changed to MV, so I got like I could get out, and I nearly signed for Suzuki Crescent Suzuki at the time it was called, and it's the Yamaha team now basically, but it used to be Suzuki, and
that's where Al got his big break, right?
Yeah, that same. So I was talking to Paul, and I had the contract, and I was like, and I could go to Speed Up, and I was like, there's a lot more money at Superbike, and I was thinking for what to do. It was like literally a third of the money I think the Moto 2, but I thought I could go and try and do it. So I said to Alex, you go ride the. So I said to Paul, "You go, Alex. You go ride a superbike, and I'll go Moto 2." So Yeah, I should actually charge him some commission. That's actually how it reminded me, to be fair. So
that's funny.
That's quite a few years ago now, so I should do him each year.
Yeah,
could get a good
royalties, man. Yeah.
But no, it's I just wanted to try at the time. Obviously, riding, I was riding super sport anyway, so 600, I had that riding style, and I thought I can go that because I've been in that super bike paddock. I know on super sport, but I know the people and I've done well. I felt like I could go to Moto2, and if it didn't work out, at least probably get another shot or try and get a shot in Superbike at that point. I was only young, and I thought...
That's after you, the Yakchenko ride?
Yeah.
Is it Yaknik?
Yaknik, yeah, it's Russians.
Yeah, I remember that, because I remember those bikes.
A lot of cash flowing.
Dude, those things were rockets, man. I know we were talking about the other day.
Yeah, I did World Supersport, I did two rounds, and it was like a different world.
Honestly, that bike, it was the best bike I've ever ridden.
Really?
Yeah. When we had, there was that year was a six or seven engine rule.
I remember that, yeah.
And four or five of my engines were the factory engine and three of them were the team engine. However it worked out, there was a couple of engines that would like the team had tried to do an engine because there was a bit of a falling out with Yamaha at certain points of the year. And the difference was just incredible. In Magna-Cola weekend, I was on the team engine and it was still good. The chassis electronics, like I said, it was the best bike. Like, we'd all get on it and you'd be more or less, you know what I mean? It's the easiest bike to take within half a second. Okay, then the last bit, yeah, it's always hard, but it's so nice bike to ride. So all weekend, I think I qualified second. The bike didn't feel so good, but was still competitive, really competitive. And after morning warm up, they seen like the pressure drop, the oil pressure dropping or something on the data. So they wanted to change the engine, but the only one they could put in was the Yamaha one. They had a bit of a falling out. Yamaha didn't really want to pay the team for the end of the year. It was a bit of a strange situation, but we used it anyway. So they literally after warm up put this engine in that I'd not used all weekend, but it's one I'd used that year. They took two teeth off the rear sprocket, right? On the sighting lap to the grid, I was on the limit everywhere. I said to the guys, you need to do something. Like, they had to take another tooth off. The first lap of the race, I was half a second faster than qualifying. And it was all in the first set. The bike was just a miss out. You still got to ride it, but I was thinking it definitely helped me out that day. I was like, this is amazing. I went on the grass the first lap of the race. I was looking down. I've done like, so it would be a second lap. Done one flying lap.
Yeah.
I looked down, I thought, I can't be the lap time. I looked down, I was on the grass. And I had to finish 14th to win the championship. I was like, whoa, what are you doing? But it was nice. It was a good experience, trialing things. But the team was a little bit strange, yeah. Mm. But it was fantastic.
I remember watching the one race. And you were fighting, who were you fighting?
Keenan. Keenan.
I remember the Donington race. That was Scrappy, wasn't it?
Oh,
was
Silverstone.
It? There it was. There it is. That was
He knocked me off on last lap.
Scrappy.
That's what me and Silverstone. Last lap knocked me off, but I still finished. I got picked the bike up, still finished second, so he didn't really get a penalty. But
yeah,
it was one of them. Like,
how hard was he to race?
Honestly, he was probably one of my favourite people to race. It was hard, but okay, that was not really fair. It was a bit of,
yeah,
but you knew where you stood, and you knew that every time you passed him, he was going to try and pass you back. But I didn't mind him. I still now go home. But Top Rack, same.
Yeah,
the Top Rack, you pass him and he passes you back straight away. But he's got the skill and he's not a dirty rider. He's a great rider.
Yeah.
It's just how they are. It's their attitude. But it's good. I learned a lot riding with him.
They're killers, man.
Good rider. Yeah. Great. Mentally strong. It was good. I learned a lot riding with him. But sometimes a little bit harsh. But that's all right.
Yeah. I mean, it probably set you up well for going Moto2, obviously.
Yeah, everyone's like that.
We asked Joe the same question. Like, who is like some of the guys that you're a little bit throughout your career that you haven't really wanted to ride around? Yeah. Is there anybody in particular that kind of jumps out at you?
What did he say? Lowe's?
No.
He didn't say.
He said
Dixon.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Was it Dixon or was it somebody else? But Dixon was another one.
Oh, and he said a few of the Italians.
Yeah.
He said they're pretty just...
Honestly, I have no problem with anyone on track. I know that, well, you know, it's not easy, is it? So you're pushing, you just try and do your best. The only thing I ever think, and what I say to the team sometimes, I come in and it was the same, I did a bit in the first two races this year. I've put myself in a bit of a mess in qualifying, so... When you go back into the 10th or 12th or 14th in them first laps, it's to be expected. You know what I mean? You're not getting the run onto the straights like you want because you're in a group, so people dive bomb you and a bit of a snowball effect. But they just ride like it's the last lap. We have 20 laps, 21 laps in Port Miles, a long race, and they dive bomb you on lap two, and you think, just lost 2 seconds.
And they're gone.
To get 2 seconds back, you have to push your balls for 3 laps. So I just think, I don't mind riding hard. It's just how it is. It's a race at the end of the day, so you may have passed people. That's no problem. When they don't think about it and it causes you 3 more laps of lost time, I just think there's no brain behind it. But
have you seen a change you know, obviously you're kind of a veteran in the class now, right? Compared to some of the young kids. Oh, you mean? Kids.
But yeah.
I'm trying to be polite here.
Vet.
Vet. That's a nice way to
say it. Plus 30.
Yeah. Have you noticed a big change, though, in like the riding style because of younger people coming in and just, you know, different aggression level or just...
But what I find with the Italian and Spanish guys, especially when they come in at 18, 19, they've literally rode as much as me. They've been riding since the 13 in Spanish Championship, which is a high level.
Yeah.
CV is high level. They're riding it on the majority, you know, a lot of the, well, all the Grand Prix tracks that we have in Spain, which are all great. So now they even do a couple of races in Italy as well, the Spanish Championship. So the young kids, but the actual amount of riding they do is more than I've ever done. Because me, when I was 16, 17, 18, I was working and riding on the weekends, 10 races a year. So it's the way they ride, technically they ride very good, all these young kids, but they're also young, but they're not stupid. I mean, the way they ride is actually, you don't feel like their age.
Yeah.
I think that.
Yeah.
That's why you get people come in, and if they're good straight away, they stay good. If they're not good straight away, they don't.
Right.
Because they're young in their age.
But they're either good or they're not.
They're good or they're not. Yeah. Because they've rode so much, and they ride on an R1 every day. Like Pedro's, Acosta is probably the one going to go to MotoGP, be one of the next, not quite Marquez probably, but you know, one of the next guys. Mm. You know, they ride 40 days in winter.
Yeah.
You know, when I used to ride three.
Yeah.
You know, they're every day. So everyone's like, oh, he's moved up and he's run. So from now the guys move up from Moto 3 to Moto 2, but they're on R1 every week.
Yeah, it's not that big of a jump.
It's not like in the past when they used to ride 125s and like jump on a 2, like was a big, now it's like they've done it all. They've rode, it's so easy to do. It's so accessible in Spain and that. So yeah, the kids, they're just young and get after it. That's what they do. But the way of riding technically, and especially the ones that are real good, they're smart. They race smart. So you don't really see that side of it. And I feel young anyway. I just look old.
I love that. What about like, you know, obviously on the same kind of topic, what do you see yourself making a move back to kind of like that World Superbike, World Supersport paddock? I don't assume you're gonna go back to World Supersport ever, but is that kind of, unless somebody calls up tomorrow and says we're going MotoGP racing, is that kind of where you see yourself headed?
I think now in all sports it's going a bit longer, isn't it? I'd like to keep riding forever because I love it, but I think you can. I've got a good few more years in me yet. I'd like to do another couple of years in Moto 2, really, this year, and try and, as long as I stay competitive, I've got a real great team, which I'm lucky about, a good relationship with the team as well. So I can, I think, stay there for a little bit more time. But I'd love to go Superbike, race with Alex, and do less races, well, more races, but less rounds and a bit less traveling. But also, at times I train a lot with the R1, love riding the R1, find it real nice to ride. Even a few laps a day we did, I was on a Kawasaki, but I love riding them bikes. So I would love to race a Superbike. Mm. I'm not sure how I would do, but I'd enjoy it. And a lot of guys now, coming from the GP or Moto 2 paddock, moving across and doing okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think this year so far has been like crazy to watch.
It's all about the opportunity, isn't it? If you get, you need a good bike.
Yeah.
The older I get, the more I understand that the opportunities you need to take are the ones that put you on the best bike, the most competitive package. Maybe I've not always made that decision for various reasons in my career, because you can't always decide what you ride. Do you know what I mean? You can't say, I'll ride for Repsol Honda. Okay, maybe at the minute, it wouldn't be a good choice. But in general, you know, you can't, I want to ride that bike. You ride what's available. But the more I understand is the more competitive you can be, it sounds obvious, is always the best thing to do.
Well, especially because if you're competitive, like money, just, everything comes with it, you know? I mean, you're saying you wouldn't take a Repsol ride right now, even though they're in the shits?
Oh, you probably wouldn't. Yeah. Hello? Yeah, I'll be there. Like, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Like when I went to Aprilia at the time, I wouldn't. Probably if I did that again, I probably wouldn't go. But not for the reasons why it didn't work out. You know, it was just maybe I could have waited a bit longer in Moto 2 because I was still quite new in the paddock, the tracks, and everything. And go, but the bike was quite good. It was such a good experience. I personally wish it had turned out differently.
And the thing is, you can't really choose sometimes your time.
Mm.
Like if you would have turned that down, you might. It seems like these guys get locked up for two years at a time, the entire grid, and then like if you don't get the seat, there's guys underneath you ready to go. Like you,
it was a bit strange because I actually signed for Aprilia in 2015. So I did the first year. So World Supersport 2013.
Oh, I remember this. This was 2014
and 15 was speed up. And already in 2015, I signed a Aprilia to go to MotoGP in 2016, 16 and 17. Then it was a bit of a strange deal. Bradle was riding the bike with Bautista at the time, and the bike weren't quite coming on as they'd like. They was meant to bring, because it was like a half super bike, half at the time.
That was the, yeah, was CRT.
Yeah, like they evolved that, and there was, and it was changing so much that they came to me. I'd already signed, everything was fixed, and they said, I think it was in Brno with me and my manager, and they said, "Oh, we want to try. We're not getting as quick development as we'd like, and we'd like to change the." We'd like to change.
My dog snoring.
Sorry,
right.
just a crowd. I'm boring people. That's what it is. No, and they came to me with the option of actually doing one more year in Moto 2 before going to Moto GP. Give them time to change the bike a bit more, improve a little bit the bike. They felt like they would need more experienced riders, maybe. And it was very strange, actually. But they gave me the option to go if I wanted to wait a year, or to like stop the contract and do something else. So it was a bit of weird, like. I was still in Moto 2 at the time, so I decided to go win Gresini Moto 2 team. So they paid me to, like, so I just did a year in Moto 2, and I tested a bit the Aprilia, and then went in 17. So it was a bit.
That was the time that Aprilia was under the Gresini.
Yeah, there was slot, like a private slot factory deal. Team sort of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't. Like yeah, because they didn't have the, I don't know what you call them, like the grid slot.
Grid slots, yeah, because it was more like just trying to give a bit of power to the teams, I think.
Yeah,
and then now obviously they're on their own, which is a bit better. But honestly, when I rode the bike, I tested the bike all winter, and I was going around. We did a test in Phillip Island in Qatar. I wasn't amazing, but I was like, this is nice. It's so fun to ride. Like, my GP bikes, obviously everything on it was great. I went so far off. And then the last test we did before the start of the season, I got the new bike, because I've been using the old bike because just to get laps. Honestly, I did about three laps on the new bike. I thought, I'm fucked. I don't understand anything here. Literally felt like I was riding a table around the track. I had no transfer, I had no feeling. I thought, oh no. I said, oh, can I go back? And they're like, no, this is the way we're going. I'm like, it'll be a long year. And it was. You know in your heart. You know when you jump on a bike. When I was in World Supersport on the Honda, I jumped on the Yamaha. I was like, this is amazing. And it turns out good. When I jumped on the speed up from World Supersport, I did a few laps. I thought, this is nice. It's nice to ride. I feel good. I did all right. And then on the Aprilia, I was going right. And I jumped on the new bike. I was like, this is going to be difficult. And it's just the way they were going with the engine. It was Aleix's first year.
Oh, okay.
But he struggled a bit. And then really late in the year, they decided to stop for the next year because we didn't do good. Fell out a little bit. And like always, in racing, when you're not going good, it's hard. You lose the confidence to people around you. It's never like people see, is it? It's never like when you're inside, it's always different. But in the end, you need to get the results. And then they put Redding on my bike the year after, but he struggled as well.
Yeah,
scored like 2 points more than me, and I was a rookie.
Yeah,
but just it won't the bike and everything won't bad. It's just the way the team was working was not great. But then they changed some stuff around, and now they're doing good, and it's nice to see.
What was the craziest thing about making that jump? Like the bike. I know you said tires are just insane. Can you kind of dive into like how crazy the tire is for like the listeners, because we're, you know, I mean, we all ride Dunlops or Pirellis or some on Bridgestones, but like to be able to understand that tire, everybody says that's the biggest hurdle.
Yeah, I think it was just the tire was so temperature dependent. Like the tire was like, if it was in temperature, it would feel like the best thing you've ever ridden. You pull the brake all the way into the corner, you're like, this thing's amazing. You go out the next morning, 8 degrees less, you headbutt the floor when you pull the brake, and you have no idea what happens. And I was like, "What?" And that then obviously your confidence drops because you're having them strange. They're like wet crashes. You pull the brake, and it never should happen in the dry. So it was real hard to understand because you knew that the tire was good, and you've had that feeling of feeling good with the tire. But when it was out the window of working, it was real hard to keep the confidence to push the tire.
That the year that Marquez had like the temperature thing on his dash? Do you remember that year?
Yeah, but that was the year. It was a strange year with the front tires. Now they've sort of got away from it a little bit. Mm. It's still a little bit bad, but the fronts were, with the rear, you don't mind too much. You can do it, you know, on the exit, you can hit the tire. Yeah, you can manage. But on the front, you're pulling the brake and it's locking, or it's hard to understand. And then you lose the feeling, lose the confidence. And you don't pull the brake as hard naturally because you've not got the confidence. And then the temperature goes down even less. And he's like, it's catch 22, but the bikes were, the MotoGP bike, I thought every time I went out in FP1, so even if it was back-to-back races or I had a weekend off, every time I went out in FP1, I was like, oh, it's fast. You know what I mean? Like, now I jump on the MotoGP bike, I do a few laps, second day of the year, like, it's just normal, it's no problem. Every time I went out in FP1 for the new start of a different race weekend, I was like, yeah, like,
you were cooking.
Yeah, we're moving here, and that was the biggest thing, really, and the technical side of it, the team, it was a tough second half of the year for me. It was like, I worked all my life to get in that position, and it was amazing, and I was loving it to be in that position, and it was a privilege to be there. But it just went what I thought. the people, you know, you dream about riding there, and then the certain things were not what I expected of the people, you know, like the company and the bike can be good or bad. That's just lucky or development or the right place, right time. But I didn't have a good feeling on my crew chief, the people around. It was real not a great environment, and that's everything for me as a the way I am, the way my character is, to perform the best and to get the most out of myself and just to feel good and just to enjoy it. You still want that group of people, because that group of people can change. That's nothing to do with the manufacturer. That group of people should always have your back, and you can pick and change them people. But it was difficult. It was difficult there, because the guys you're racing against, the best in the world.
Yeah. So, I mean,
if you can't even be your best,
Against teams that like.
Yeah. I could have had any bike that year. I could have had any bike on the grid, and I'd have got the same results because I couldn't do my best. So, in the class like
was
that,
was it just a vibe thing, or was it like? Language barrier. A little bit,
not really language, vibe thing, and the way how everyone was working, and it was like it was so strange. It was like there was all some of the people had been there a long time, there's a bit over it, but the crew chief and that, it's like they were just trying to cover them for themselves all the time rather than like,
because you're doing bad, and so they're bad, like, they're pointing fingers and
a little bit like that,
which
can be. I'm like I said, everyone's got a job, Marquez, so I understand.
You can't demand who you want.
Stuff I do wrong, but also do some stuff right, because you gave me the ride in the first place. So I always find it real weird.
Yeah, it's tough. Team stuff is tough. I think a lot of people don't realize, like, because you think racing is such a singular sport, and you don't really see the crew. I mean, I think now more with, like, F1, for example, right, you see, like, all these guys are now celebrities in themselves, and now it's like, there's actually, like, there's people behind
It's so much money and so much effort around to actually just put the bikes on the grid that it's weird, but I've always just thought that should be the main focus. But when there's so much behind it, it's not always the case. Or, you know, things aren't going good, they need to say, but the other rider's doing good, or, you know, so they blame you, which is fair. You know, it's a results driven sport, but it's not always black and white.
Yeah. How it is. Have you had? I'm sure over the years it's something you've strived to get back to. But like, how far and few between are the opportunities to actually get into GP?
I had a chance after that to go with the current team I'm with now. With the VDS, where they had satellite Hondas for a bit, but I didn't want to do it really. It was not a great deal, and the bike was so uncompetitive. I'd done that for a year. I wanted to get back to Moto2, try and fight for the championship, and then get back that way. Like, I felt like if I could win a championship in Moto2, then I'd get another chance on a bit of a better situation, because you've got the championship behind you.
Right.
But yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult. Yeah. Now there's not really a bad bike.
Oh yeah, it's
maybe the Honda. It's you crazy can't really you say it, but maybe the Honda.
Even that's like within 0.8.
Yeah,
which is like crazy to think it's that close. But
it's insane this year. I mean, I think it's pretty crazy how they've been able to kind of do that, like a BSB, and even World Superbike now is like getting a lot tighter, and they like Moto2. You know, if you're second off the pace, you are.
At least Moto2, everything's the same.
Yeah.
And like, my team's probably a great team, fantastic team, nothing to say in a bad way. But what we can have more than another team in Moto2 is very little, because everyone can have the same. Whereas obviously in Superbike or MotoGP, you can have the best team in the world. But if you had, now the bike's good, but I don't know, a Honda or at the minute it doesn't seem as good, the Ducati looks stronger at certain races. So it's more different in that sense. That's why Moto2 is such a good class and a bad class.
Yeah.
Because the place where you find the most time in Moto2 is the hardest place to find it, and is the mirror, because normally the guy that's drilling you or beating you is on the same bike, but not always on the same bike, same tire, right. Same engine, same suspension, different crew. But for how much does?
Yeah,
I mean,
what do you think is the thing that I asked Joe this question? But like, what is it that what does it take to be that guy that's kind of in the top five every weekend? Like, it seems harder and harder every year to be one of those guys that's consistent. But what is the difference, you think? Is it just purely the guys in the right space?
I think doing a good job in the winter with a base setting that work, because limited time on a race weekend, understanding the tie as well, because they're quite complicated, and just being the point. What I find in Moto2 when I came from Supersport was the intensity of the riding. Like, in Supersport, I used to push real hard, especially in qualifying sometimes, obviously, of course, like, do that, and I couldn't go any faster in that lap. But in the races, it was a bit more relaxed, you know, and the tires probably would drop more. Like, Dunlop never dropped. In 90% of the races, we never have a tyre drop. Like, you can do the best lap at the end, normally, more or less. And you have to get used to being comfortable and not making mistakes. That intensity is like a quali lap every lap. But obviously, if you're doing 20 quali laps and you're holding your breath, it's hard to do.
Yeah.
And being doing every weekend.
Yeah.
And that's where I feel like Moto2 is like that. The way the bikes are, the way the tyres are, where they don't drop. You've just got to really get used to riding at that intensity without making mistakes.
So is that how you feel? Because I wonder that too also, like when you see those lap times that are like the same the entire race. Like, are you like... Yeah, the whole time.
You literally like that. You literally feel like you're sprinting the whole race.
Is that why we see like unexpected crashes? Because you're just on the limit.
But the bike, yeah, on the limit, and the bikes are so stiff. Like the margin is strange. Like when I ride, I can like ride the R1. Just is anything I can compare on the same tires, brakes. I have similar suspension. Okay, the forks not, but the shock similar to the Moto2. I feel like I could ride it around forever and hardly miss an apex. And then I jump on my Moto2 bike. Obviously, it's lighter. There's so many things easier. The power's a bit less, and it's so not hard work physically, but like every bump, you come off the curb just a little bit wrong, it sets the bike off. Like there's just no forgiveness. So it's and also you do a lot of things a little bit in Moto2. You can't when the track's not that grippy and you can't get a good feeling. You do it a little bit on. It should work, you know. I know I can go through the ways with a production bike, which I always rode growing up. You get a lot of feedback, so you do it on feel and build up and up, and then okay, there's the limit. Sometimes in Moto2, you're riding a little bit vague and just going for it.
I wonder if that's why, you know, you see these, I mean, bring back those crashes that were just like, what? Like, yeah, you're like, you're why? Just like, you're like, dude, like,
and it's the same on the data. They come back, and I said, look, guys, honestly, I crashed in Mugello 21. I was past Remy, I was catching up with Ralph Fernandez at the time was leading the race, and I felt real good. And I thought, I was on the hard tyre. I thought, I'm in good position here. Done the hard work, got a bad start, as always. Coming through, and I thought, I'm in good position. And I came, I would be out of one, lost the front. And I was sliding down the track, and I thought, what happened? Like, it was just like one of them where I could crash in that race, a couple of parts. I thought, yeah, I'm pushing. Of course, obviously, I'm pushing. Do you know what I mean? A couple of chicanes, I was training, I felt like the front. I felt like I'd go through that corner there as long as I live and never crash. It's not one of the corners that you really feel like you crash on, you know? His second one, crash, I could have, every lap of the race felt like I'm a little bit on the limit. The first one, I was like, it's not even that sort of corner. Literally, changed direction and just went down. And until this day, I said to the guys, please, please tell me what happened. There was two laps, tell me what happened, because I shouldn't be crashing in two laps to go in that place. If you finish second, is all right. But it was a K faster than the lap before. It was a K slower than five laps before. The lean angle was just a bit more than the last lap, but 3 degrees less than your maximum. Do you know what I mean? It was like, because you can talk about it forever when you go on the day. So I said, okay then. So what happened? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, well, it's obviously a mistake. Must be a mistake because I crashed, but tell me what happened. No idea. You think everything that we've got, whereas now, like a lot of times I crash. I've crashed a lot in my career. And you know, especially in qualifying, or when you're pushing hard, you say, sorry guys, I was a bit fast there, a bit wide. Or, you know, even if you don't want to say it, when you're on your own, sit down, you're like,
yeah, you think about it.
You know what you do. Even if you don't really know, you say, yeah, I was on the limit anyway, so it could happen. And crashes like that in Moto2 are strange. I always talk to Alex about it, and he's like, no, I don't really have that. I know when I'm going down.
That's why I had that in Super Sport.
You're like so frustrated. You got your guy, you're pulling for him, he's coming through the pack.
Like,
come on, dude.
Like, I mean,
I think it was Cameron last year in Texas, last lap.
Yeah, so, what?
And I said, I remember talking to him after I had a problem. Like, so what happened? And he's like, no idea.
It's crazy, man. Because I mean, I'm good friends with Dixon, and I'm all those races, man. I'm like, dude, and you know, we talked about it, and I'm like, bro, like, can you back it down? And he goes, dude, that like one, no,
yeah,
like two, like nothing different.
That's what's strange, but then. I always think that, and I always say to my crew chief, Gilles Bigot, he's called, he's French, but he's been around forever. He was with Crevier when he won the World Championship in 98 or 97, reps along. So he's seen everything. So I always talk to him, and he's a knowledgeable guy, calm guy. I says, Gilles, just tell me what happened. He goes, honestly, mate, he goes, it's one of them. But he says, because that's happened, and we don't know why, it means you was on the limit too much, which is true. Because you try and say, enough, you know, as a rider, you want, like, not to prove it wasn't your fault, because it can be, and I accept when overloaded the front.
Of course
you want to know, but he just says that means that you need to understand. In this instance we can't tell you, but it means you're too close to the limit at that point. I'm like, fuck yeah, I didn't feel like it. He says, yeah, but we need to find a way. So I think that class also mean that. But this year I'm trying to do that a bit. Also the new bike's a bit more feedback, which is good, but just try and understand it. But it takes a lot. It's harder to understand than like the production bike or.
How do you work on that? I mean,
yeah, it's one of them. Just by it's all with the practice times, isn't it, and the testing and the consistency. Because if you do all the work hard in practice, don't do slow laps, do the rhythm, or in the garage, chase them back out, do the rhythm, then you know what you can do. If you try and go more in the race and crash, you've done something you've not done all weekend. So it's just getting that data, get that information in your brain. But the new bike, for me, the new bike with the new forks that we have this year is a lot more feedback. And that's a positive thing.
Is that something that you feel like you've got in your head a bit in terms of like when you're now two laps to go, Mugello, is that something you're thinking about?
I wouldn't crash in that race now, but I wouldn't try to win that race.
Right.
So, because I said enough what happened and they couldn't tell me what happened because they checked and the data was the same. But I was trying to win.
Yeah.
So I can say, but in that corner, I was not doing anything different, which I probably wasn't, but I was pushing really hard. Yeah. Like, as hard as we all would at the end of the race, trying, not doing, but I was pushing, whereas maybe I should, I'd probably just say, I finished second.
Because
in my career, like in 2020, I lost by 8 points. I made a few mistakes that year. To 8 points is not a lot at the end of the year.
Yeah,
Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a 1/8 place.
Yeah.
I crashed out of 3 races where I would have got more than 8th. I know everyone can say that. I know that.
No, but
you've got to learn from that.
Well, you have to make a mind shift. Yeah, you've got to
pick your battles.
100%.
And my career, it's been maybe growing up, and when my dad is always real, real pushing me and Alex, like pushed a lot. He's like, you have to win, or you need to be better. He's not spoke to me when I've won a race in motocross and that because I don't know, wheeled over the line or did something wrong. From a young age, I've always been like quite pushing, just always pushing. So. But yeah, it's took me a long time, but finally learned a little bit.
So you talk about the team and stuff like that. Do you think Mark VDS, all right, they've been around for forever, especially since the inception of the Moto2. And everybody who seems to go there seems to level up. You know, they seem to be able to pick kind of like AO or KTM team.
Yeah.
It seems like they can handpick people pretty well and everybody escalates pretty good and does really really good. Do you feel like the team with the experience just like, is there something underneath that team? They calm people down. Do they support you better? Like what's with the team? Why is it so good?
Yeah, I'd say they support you good. They're behind the rider, which is real nice. Some of it will be in the brain of the riders because they, you know, like you said, they pick the right. And you think that this is the best team or good team. So that always helps, doesn't it? If you know other people have been in that team and done well, you know that you start looking at yourself rather than the team because
if they've won.
If other people can do it, then obviously that's one box ticked. You'd focus on something else. And you know the best teams they attract the good riders. You know the guys that are winning Moto3 go to them, my team or KTM team, and so
it's just a feed.
Yeah, so it's a little bit like Pedro Acosta. I don't know if he won his first race, finished second, but like won his second Grand Prix from pit lane. So he's good, isn't he? Then put him up on Moto2, he's going to do well because he's obviously good. He won every race in Rebel Rookies. So whoever took him was good. So I think that them teams are the best, but they also, the best riders try to ride for them teams. But Moto2 is a strange one because everything can be quite
so close.
Yeah. It's hard because it's so tight. The differences are so small, but maybe then it does have advantage to the better teams, even though it's only a small advantage, because that advantage is harder to find. Yeah, exactly. So all I know is my team is very good and they do everything. Any little thing, it's like a MotoGP team.
Yeah.
Like, as much as they can do, because obviously the rules, but they do every little thing, the weight and everything, which is, when you see the team do that, you obviously do your part as well. It's a nice class to be in. I think that something could change in Moto2 to be a bit different. But it's also true that if you know that even if your team's maybe not got the biggest budget, they're struggling for some things, if you can have a good relationship with your crew, good relationship with your crew chief and work hard in the winter and get a good base, most of them teams can, riders can win the race on the package they've got, which is a good thing to have. I don't know if you're in Superbike or you've got a team that's, you know, lacking a bit in budget, not quite got the last bit of electronics, don't have the last chassis upgrade, for example. I don't know, just an example.
Yeah.
Right? You know that it's difficult to win. Even if you ride better than the other guys or if you do everything you can, you might not win. And that's obviously not nice to be in that position also. So I think for that, Moto2 is a good class.
Mm.
But sometimes it'd be nice to have more difference, but it depends, doesn't it, which side you're on.
Yeah, for sure. What do you think about, you know, like, so Cam, for example, like, well, I think he's my teammate going into this year. I think one of the big reasons he decided to come back was just because it didn't seem likely he was ever going to get a shot to go to GP. I mean, of the guys that are in the class, there's really only ever going to be six or seven that actually make it out.
Yeah.
How sustainable is it to be a rider in that series for some of these younger kids? It seems like it's like you see more guys getting spit out right away.
But I think that's, of course, because everyone wants to go to MotoGP. It's everyone's target, mine, everybody's. But I think it's just, it's hard. If you're getting the results and you're in the top 10 and top 5 every week and up there, then you can stay because you're going to get a ride.
Yeah.
But it depends where you want to go. To go to MotoGP, it's also now the next couple of years will be difficult because there's only limited rides there.
Yeah.
And the people they're taking in MotoGP are getting younger and younger. So they're getting longer and longer contracts. So every year there's two or three
seats not opening.
Seats not opening, and now it's like for next couple of years it's really blocked.
Right.
Like for next year, I don't know who. I don't know if there's any rides available, or maybe I don't know. But like, none of the good bikes.
You get the oddball like Zarco. I mean, he's an older.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even say he's older, but I mean he's definitely more the vet guy. But he like had to smash it in Moto 2, you know, to get there.
Yeah.
And I mean he's a great rider, but. It still can be done.
Yeah.
You just, if I feel like it's timing. And I mean, he kind of.
I think it's all about timing and opportunity. But like, I think Cam could have stayed another year if he wanted, I guess. He could have got, he was doing, yeah. And say he'd have started winning some races, which he was capable to do. I'm sure he could have got a ride. But it depends. That's, it's hard to know, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think.
Also, he's, Europeans, you don't want to say it because you sound a bit like a broken record. A lot of people say it and you sound like you're making excuses, but I'm not talking about myself now. I'm talking about other people. So, and. It's harder to get the opportunities unless you know, the Spanish, they're more entitled, you know, they're just going to make it. Also, my teammate, Tony, good guy, good rider, at the minute he's had a good start to the year, he'll probably go to MotoGP. But in his head, and you watch the way he carries and the people around him, it's like a given.
He knows that, yeah.
It's a given.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So their attitude's different. And somehow, some way, it's hard to put reason why, but it makes a difference. Whereas but riders from over here or from England, from other parts of Europe, I feel like they're always trying to prove themselves all the time.
Yeah.
Even Miller, I'm friends with Jack, and we talk a lot about it. Even him, a little bit different as well, like that. You feel like you're always trying to prove yourself, and it's a completely different mindset and attitude, and it, somehow it makes a difference.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's like watching Jack on the KTM, I think it's probably the coolest thing that he's done so well right away, because it's like, I don't know how you could ever discredit him
but
people still were.
Yeah, still were, yeah.
It's kind of weird.
It's crazy.
You know, you wonder like if that was.
But they will now. Still, it's weird.
Yeah,
but he's done all right.
Do you think? Do you think the passport plays a lot into it?
Like I said, I don't want to be like a broker, and I don't know if it does or not, and I don't want to because you can still have the opportunities. If you're winning any class, you'll get an opportunity.
Of course,
don't matter who you are, where you're from. If you're going to MotoGP and you win 10 races, you're going to MotoGP.
You got to do it.
Do you know what I mean? So let's say that don't matter where you're from. You come in as a rookie or your second or third year in MotoGP and you win 10 races. You'll go there because that's how it is.
But you look at the nationality list, it's a given. So you don't really, there's.
Yeah,
you
know. Of course. I mean, I mean, a lot of the sponsors are Spanish, Italian.
How hard was it for you coming from England? You know, I mean, it seemed to be like a window there where there was a lot of English guys and now there was like a lull.
Yeah.
Right. You got Rory that came over, but other than that, there's not a ton, right?
I don't know. I felt quite lucky at the points when I was a bit younger and doing super sport and decided to then come across. But I didn't have loads of opportunity. I could have gone with Tech 3 with the your favourite bike that you rode. The Mistral, wasn't it? The Mistral. You did ride it.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah. And or the Speed Up. And if you asked a lot of people in the paddock, they would say that they're not the best two options.
Yeah.
Looking back, would have maybe not been that bad to go with a Tech 3 because you wouldn't have had to win on that bike to maybe get a chance in MotoGP. Mm. And obviously MotoGP at the time they had Yamaha, which was it's maybe now at the minute struggling a little bit, but at the time was great.
Yeah.
You know, satellite Yamaha was a lot of people done good on the Tech 3 bike. So they were my two options. I could not have rode a Kallax at that point. But I jumped on Speed Up, and Speed Up was actually really good, like it is now. There's just not many of them, but the bike's really good. And I just believed in my head that the fact that the engine was exactly the same, suspension was the same, tires were the same. The engine has to bolt in at the same point because it's the same engine. I thought, how different can it be? I had a good team. People were real nice, motivated at Speed Up, and I went for it. But some people would have probably not because it was not the preferred bike at the time. So, yeah, maybe at that point, the options were... I didn't see it like that because I was real confident coming from Supersport. I had a great year battling with Keenan, so I was full of confidence. So maybe I just didn't see it. I thought, oh, it's great, I'll try and do it. Mm. And that helped me. But, yeah, there weren't that many options, to be fair.
Yeah.
Most people, I went to the first round, first ever time in Qatar. We'd never been there, and I finished. I qualified fifth and finished sixth, or qualified sixth and finished fifth. I can't remember which way round it was. And Vinales was a rookie that year as well. He'd moved up from Moto 3, and he finished one place behind me because it was like we were both rookies. He drilled me the rest of the year, but and I remember beating him in the first race, and I thought, and honestly, I went from nobody in the paddock talking to me, and this paddock is like that. Nobody talking to me. I didn't even know who I was, because even if I'm super sport, they don't look. And it was a bit like that. I didn't care. I was quite young then. I didn't really care. To literally, it was a strange finishing that race and everyone going, all right, Sam.
Yeah.
I went, no, yeah, right, yeah, ciao, whatever it is, hola, whatever the fuck. Yeah. Just like, yeah, I mean, and I seen that and that annoyed me a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought that was strange.
Yeah, Joe talked about the same thing. Like nobody really gave him the time of day until he had the like,
qualified pole.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
then all of a sudden it was like,
and then there's just all of a sudden everyone's like, hey, yo.
Yeah. But do you think it's like that for everybody or just because of your nationality?
You have to remember all the Spanish telling guys, they've all known them people for years.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the teams, especially the Moto 2 and 3 teams, have a junior team. Yeah. So they've just, and all the ones that are a bit older, they've just moved up a bit before. So they all know each other. It's strange to explain, really. Do you know what I mean? Imagine, like, you know, we're all here, Chuck Waller, riding together.
Yeah.
Then you move up to Moto, but you know everyone. So like the World Cup, that's why and they know everyone and they've beat them or not beat them, but they've all rode together. So that gives them that extra bit of confidence because
they know the lap times as well.
They've seen this guy do it. They know they've beat that guy before. And with iTurno, I don't even know half the people.
Yeah.
Literally sat on a plane next to him all the way. I don't even have a race against him because I've never been in that situation. So I think it's really hard to make it in Grand Prix not coming through the Moto 3 way because also a lot of the riders, nearly all the riders do. So they all ride in that riding style. So even in Moto 2, the bikes are developed for the majority. So Calyx are good to listen to everybody's comments, but the tires, the bike, suspension, if they get, you know, 20 comments and 90% of them going one way, they're going to go in that way.
Yeah.
We would, because obviously it's the only way to do it. So if you don't ride like that, it's more difficult.
That's funny.
It's back to snoring over there.
When you had to do your first year, how hard was it learning like a bunch of the new tracks?
Yeah, that was the hardest thing. So all the tracks that I'd been to before, I didn't do that bad. But I remember because the track diamond, and the thing is, like me now, because I know we've mentioned it, I'm slightly older, but I can go to a lot of the tracks now, like Austin, like, you know, I race there once a year, but in FP1, I'd be quite fast, but a lot of the guys. But like, so you just bang straight away, you're on the pace.
And how much is first practice like crucial to your weekend?
If, honestly, we have no time now. We have to just go straight away. And just
because of the sprint race,
this short under session, we get 2 40-minute sessions on Friday, a 30-minute FP3 in quali.
Oh yeah,
not so much, especially if you get a bit of a wet session.
Oh, and then the thing is, if you have to quali for Q1,
yeah, top 14.
Do you prefer? Would you rather have more time, like as somebody who's got a bit more experience
in Europe? Like, in Europe, no, I don't mind the schedule.
Yeah,
I think it's great. I don't mind it. It's I'd prefer more time because I love riding, but I don't need it really. But in the overseas, I prefer more time because, like Austin, we don't ride there that much, so we're still playing around with gearing. Like this race in Argentina last weekend, we had a bit of a damp session, so we didn't do many laps. And like first session, you do 44s because it's so dusty. Second session, you do 43s. Yeah. Qualifying was all doing 42. So you're making such big steps. The bike's changing loads when normally we don't have that. So it's hard. Yeah, we make the race ended up being wet. But if it was dry, I'd have changed the gearing for the race, which is. I know it's not a massive thing, but if you go the wrong way,
you can get it wrong.
That's why I didn't qualify, and I'd already gone wrong, and that ended up being 14th on the grid. So the schedule now for the overseas and everything is tight because the tracks, same for Superbike, but the tracks are hard work in FP1 for the dust and for the... So I think they could give us a bit more time overseas, but same for everybody.
Yeah. Yep. You mentioned your dad kind of being a bit tough on you growing up. Would you consider him like your stereotypical moto dad type of guy?
He's not stereotypical moto dad, but he was mostly because of the stress of paying for racing and paying for me and Alex, two of us, and working and probably because he wanted to give more. But it was so like so many times we're driving back in silence and pushing and all sorts and like, no, come on, dad. And it's quite hard really. But soon as 2011, 10, 11, 12 came, like now I talk to my dad about racing and he says nothing. The last 10 years, honestly, it was so weird. We got to one point and now he comes to the race, has drinks and hospitality. He comments because he's my dad and he wants me to do well and he's strong and he gets annoyed maybe if I don't do well. but he never gets involved with the team, never speaks about it. So it's so not strange, but he just, so he's not lap. He never, when he realised the teams are doing their job, they're trying to give the best bite, never got involved. And I respect him a lot for that because it's hard to do.
Yeah, yeah. You know, especially when you're so involved.
Yeah, I've got a daughter now and I'd be like, I could imagine, I'd be not pushy, but I'd be like, why are they doing that? Yeah, you can't always see it.
What, like, how much do you think that mindset played a role into you being able to go from England into kind of the deep end?
I think it's helped me a lot in my career, and I think it's hindered me a lot in my career, the fact that I just always push too much. There's a lot of things in my, which you need to do, obviously. Yeah, we all know, as you know, like when it's quality, you got to get after it.
Especially when you don't want to.
Yeah, but I've had like quality, like I've had the record, I've got the record poles in Moto2, but I've not won a championship. So there's good points and good points and bad points. So I think that's took a long time, even though I realise it and know and should know and do know that you got to pick your battles.
Yeah.
Naturally fall into that pushing too much and going that extra bit. This year I feel a little bit different, but we've done two races, so let's wait and see.
Do you think that has to do with having a daughter by chance, or?
No, not really.
No, there's nothing to do that?
No, because she's four already and I've made a lot of mistakes since she was born.
That's interesting because they see.
I think it's growing up helps. Talking to Alex a lot. Me and Alex talk a lot about everything, and if you keep doing the same thing, you get the same result. Yeah. I mean, I've been quick enough at certain points in my career to win the championship. I've been close a few times, but I've gave away a lot. Obviously, every rider thinks at the end of the year they can look back and we could all win a race on a Monday because it's easy in it to do it. Mm. So I know that, but rather than not being good enough to win the championship, I've lost the points. I've been in a position to have the points and lost them through mistakes that I've made by crashing at the wrong point. So I needed to change a little bit.
Do you think having a kid has kind of made you reflect on certain things like about your just growing up and some of the aspects? Yeah. Like, I know that's something you always kind of hear like in therapy, right? You like,
yeah, yeah. No, but no, it's good. It's good. It changed a lot in your life, but it has made me, how can I say this without sounding bad, it's made me not care too much about certain things. You know, in the past, I'd try and keep everyone happy, make sure everyone's all right. And that's hindered me in my career because, like I said, in Aprilia or when the ambience wasn't great, maybe took it more to heart than I needed to. Now I don't care, really.
Yeah.
Like, as long as if the people there to do the job and if someone's not happy, okay, I want the team to be good. I treat all the people that I work with respect. My mechanics, I treat them really good because it's important to me. But if someone's not like that and they're there just doing a job, I just take it as a pinch of salt. I've got my life. I know I changed my priorities a little bit. I know that my bike's good, my team's good. So probably just care a little bit less about things that don't really matter.
Yeah. Well, do you think it's kind of shifted your, I don't want to say priorities, but shifted
my priorities, and, you know, maybe in the past would make a mountain out of a molehill when really it's not a big deal, you know, like now I just push it off and focus.
Yeah. That's awesome. How much time does your family get to actually come to all the races or what?
Yeah, so my wife actually works in the team. She
you said that.
Basically runs the team, so she's the boss.
They're not getting ready anytime soon.
At the home and work, yeah.
It's a good move.
So she's mega. I'm very lucky. She's amazing. But my daughter comes to a lot of the races because obviously we're both away.
Mm-hmm.
They're actually flying now to Austin, so I'm meeting them down there, so that'll be cool. In Europe, most of the races, overseas, not all. She probably comes to 70% of the races, so it's nice. But she's getting on. She's 4.5 already, so she starts school in September. So she'll have to do more school then and do a bit less of the races. So
yeah,
at the minute we're taking her to some.
How is that going to work out with your wife? Is she going to keep doing the racing thing and having your kid in school?
I don't know. I'll have to ask her. Yeah. She'll sort it out. Like,
that's her.
I just ride. I just get told what's happening. So this is happening. I say, okay, darling, nice one.
Yeah.
We'll just make a bit of a plan. My mum and dad will have her a bit and just. My wife, she doesn't have to do all the races, so we can plan it quite well, really.
That's nice.
And obviously, I've got a lot of golf to get in as well.
I was just going to say.
It's quite a busy schedule, to be honest.
That's funny. So Jay works with your brother. Is he working with you on like a riding perspective as well? Like, how much time do you spend on actual riding coaching? It's kind of interesting to me because I don't think a lot of guys in Europe have a rider coach so much, right?
Yeah, like, I've done some stuff. We talk a lot. We have long drives and talk a lot about just having some drink here. So we're all right.
If everybody can hear that is Fez just, he's just.
That's what I sound like with the Jack Daniels. after a win. Been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Where were we at?
Oh, we were talking about with Jay. He was talking with Al.
With Jason, we talk a lot. Do you know what? It's refreshing, honestly, to talk a lot and to even be here talking to people and think about stuff a little bit differently and riding. Because I do a lot, you as well, James, you as well. Like, you do so much on a bike that you don't think about. Mm. And you watch back, you think, why do I do that? And you don't know why, but it's obviously years of riding and you figure it out yourself without even knowing you figured it out, the stuff you do. So it's good to sometimes think about it and try and improve. And I know I ride a lot with my arms, I need to use my legs more and certain different things, body position. But yeah, it's good. It's good to have a different neutral information. And I think the day that you think you can't learn anything is a bad day. I mean, I know that, you know, Mark Marquez will go faster than me on whatever bike I've got. If I moan about the bike in my debrief after the race, I've always been quite good at sitting there and obviously moaning and making excuses because that's part of the job. But also sitting there and going, I could have done better. Yeah. The bike could be ridden faster. Maybe it's not loads faster because I feel like certain times I ride quite good. But and that's where I think that's in the Grand Prix and in World Superbike and all the top national and world us riders. If you think like that is the only way to
move forward.
To move forward and get them last bits. Whereas a lot of people, you sit and talk to them, and no one is an example here, but just I've spoke to so many people over the years and you talk to them and say, oh, you know, how is it going? How's your session? Or, the bike's not doing this and the tire didn't do that and the team didn't do that, you know. But if I did all that, you know, I'd win.
Yeah, and they didn't even give me a coffee in the morning.
Yeah, they didn't even do that.
They didn't have chicken and rice. Like, I get you.
I said, it's my grandma, it should be my granddad. So you can't say it, can you?
Yeah. What's your outlook on the rest of the year? I know you want to try to keep it under an hour and 10 right now. So.
Yeah.
I didn't even notice. Yeah. Now, honestly, I've only done two races. They've not been great. I had, 7th, I think, in Portugal, 10th in Argentina. Bad qualifying, which didn't like me. Normally, it's one of my strong points, but it's the start of the year. Both qualifying, I've messed up a little bit, but there's nothing. I said to the team, we've done two sessions. You know, Argentina was a strange weekend with the weather. Put them out, I just didn't do a good lap. My pace was real good in the race. I had podium pace. It was one of my best rides in a long time, so I enjoyed it. Argentina was wet, so I've not felt that great in the wet. And actually, the race, I rode quite good, so I feel like I'll be good. I feel like in the winter, I felt a lot more in control. I really like the new bike. The new bike with the new Ellings that we've got, I feel that I've got that 2% margin, which I've missed a bit since being in Moto2. You know, this year I've had no big mistakes. I've not
had crash. Kind of numb. This numb is what before?
Yeah, vague, a little bit vague. Mm. So sometimes feeling, sometimes not. You sort of did it a bit on blind faith. And I know I can go through there that fast. It's all right, but it's not great to do 21 races
not
like
a good
that.
Yeah, I mean, not gonna,
so. I feel like we've done a good job in the winter. I really like the new package. I feel so motivated since last year. Since June last year, end of June last year, I've not raced properly. I did two races at the end of last year. Didn't do one of the races. Pulled out on Saturday. Finished 12th in Phillip Island, but only because everyone crashed. My pace was real bad and my shoulder was bad. So I feel a little bit rusty, a little bit on the race weekends. It's a bit strange having that long off. But I feel so good, like, in myself and riding. Like, I feel like I've... Having that half a season off, feel like I'm sort of refreshed. Feel I'm 21 again. I could keep going forever. So, but I feel like I've done a good winter. I feel like I'm riding well. I feel like I just need one step to be really, really good. I'm going to go to Austin, try and do a good weekend and get to Europe and kick forward. I think when I get back to Europe, I feel like I can be real strong.
Is Coda a track you like, or? I mean, you kind of have to like everything, but you got to have favorites over or not.
Yeah, I do like it. I won my first Grand Prix win was there with Speed Up in 2015. Since then, I did finish, I think I won in 15, second in 16. Last few years have not been great. I like all the tracks, really. You know, I'm not going to moan about flying around the world, coming to great places like this, great places like Austin and ride around the track, you know, is good. It's a long track.
It's crazy.
And now with the schedule we have, we're going to get what? In a 40-minute session, you're going to get, I don't know.
It's almost a two-minute lap time.
Yeah, but you obviously don't stay out, do you?
It's 2:07.
Lap time.
Or 2:06 or 2:07.
Yeah, I think we've done 07s or 08s.
Like 12 laps probably.
Yeah, 12 timing laps. You know, so it's 24 laps on Friday. Saturday morning, you're going to get 10 laps max. So, you know, you're looking in quality. So before the race, we're not doing that many laps.
You got to do it.
You got to do it. So I think it's going to be real. That's why it's so important this winter to get a good base, which I feel like we've got. The last few years, Coat has been a track where the base set up, but this is for everybody, so it's not always a bad thing, is a little bit out because it's so bumpy. It'd just be a case of getting there, ripping in the first session and going forward.
Yeah. What is it like coming to America compared to some of the European tracks as a, you know, someone who obviously is a lot more congested and things like that?
Yeah.
And
I like coming here. I really like it. Golf courses are great.
Priority
number one is the golf course.
People are nice. Some of them are real nice, especially you two. But I don't know. I like racing here. I like racing out of Europe. In Europe is different in it. Them guys, myself, but they've just rode the track so much. Like we go to, after here, we go to Jerez.
Millions
of laps. All them little kids are on millions of laps around there. So in the end, you're just straight on it from FP1. It's like a different sort of vibe, really. Yeah. I like it. I'm really looking forward to next week. Hopefully the weather's not too bad. Argentina was a bit of a bummer, really. Travel all the way there. Didn't really get the weekend going. So hopefully get a dry race and enjoy it. And yeah, it would be nice.
So you think you're coming to Moto America next year or what?
Couple of years, I think. Couple of years. I'm going to try and raise the baggers with him.
Would you throw one on?
Would I take you on? Not after what I've heard today, no.
Yeah.
I tried out breaking today. Yeah. And he ran off track.
Yeah. Maybe you get Norton to come over with you or something.
Yeah, could actually. A blast from the past.
It is.
That'd be rough. Funny. That'd be real rough.
Oh, yeah. Would you throw a leg over one?
I don't want to be disrespectful, but how did you get on it in Daytona? Because you didn't mention it today. did he win? Did he win?
Yeah.
Dude, you're looking at a red plate, dude. Just call me. You jumping on the
top
wagon?
Top points board.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Did you see him almost crash into the wall head on?
Yeah, but did he get a tank slapper on?
Tank slapper.
He reckoned it only just finished last night.
Mate, it's still going.
You were racing. It was on the MotoGP telecast. Like, they're like, who's this guy? Yeah. Dude, backers are, you didn't realize that backers are coming to Coda.
No.
What a support race.
I'll be tipping into turn one and you'll be up the inside.
I heard they were talking about actually doing that and really bringing it back.
You know why they shut it down? It's because we're getting so close to Supersport, they were nervous.
Yeah. He's getting close to our lap times.
Could you imagine?
The back straight there. Whoa.
It is crazy, though. What did you do, 51?
Yeah.
51 at Daytona. The Supersport guys were doing 48s, 49s.
Yeah.
It's not bad, is it?
That's scary. It's not bad.
It's terrifying to watch in person.
Is it?
Like, you watch from the side of the track, and you're like, they're
going
to crash.
Yeah, they're going down every corner.
Anytime.
You said you can ride them hard.
You can ride them. Like, you would love it. Like, they're, I mean...
I'm not having McWilliams pass me up the inside. I'm not having that. Yeah, I'm not ready.
You know,
for that.
The only thing McWilliams would be doing is be a fucking bike coming by you because he's tucked in front a few times in the straight line. The thing is, dude, is like they're you'd love it. You'd love it because you can. I mean, fuck, it feels like you can't crash. Like it fucking feels like that. Like,
what do they say in Europe about it? I'm curious.
But it's quite new. To be fair, it's been picking on it over the last couple of years, but it's quite like now it's getting quite a lot of press and the people are loving it.
Yeah.
Do they like it?
They like it, especially in England, love it, yeah. I've not spoken much with Italians about it.
Could you imagine some baggers at Brands Hatch Indy?
Yeah. Imagine Cadwell.
Oh, fuck.
He'd never land.
Jump in one of those.
Are you kidding me? It'd just be all over the weekend.
It'd be terrifying.
It'd be tough around there, wouldn't it? But it's nice. Anyway, win's a win, isn't it?
The win's a win, baby.
Win's a win.
Yeah,
he's
red plate.
Making more money than half the paddock.
Yeah.
Winning those races.
Yeah, dude, it's paper chasing.
He don't spend it though, does he? Honestly.
What? I had to go to a plantation.
Never seen his wallet.
Were you guys gambling yesterday?
No,
I think he bet me 2 cents on one of the pulls.
No. I didn't bet. Everybody else was. I didn't. I'm not a.
I'm lucky. I got JP to carry me.
Yeah.
I didn't make any bets. He just said, "Sam, we're in for this. We're in for that." I said, "Oh, nice one, JP." And I said, "Play well," and he won, and we took the money. That was perfect. Really. How long we done? He's probably still in a bad mood about them last 2 hours.
Yeah, no.
Is he
in a bad mood, really?
Well, dude, he was playing so good. Like he was
really good.
We were what were we saying? -6.
He is good though.
He's so good.
Yeah.
But there was definitely a change in face when he was like, "James, you know, here's what we're doing, Pard. Yeah, I need you. You're freaking whatever 150. Let's work on an 8." You know what I mean? Let's say the low 8, like this. And he's like caddying for me. And then like those last 4 holes, I'm like, "Hey, Jay, how far is it?" He goes, "Here's the thing."
He goes, "It's there."
And every single time he goes, "Take your putter." I'm like, "All right, man." All right, Jay.
He's good. He's good. I really like spending time with him on the golf course because one, he's good at golf. Two, talk about racing. I like his outlook on the riding. The way he thinks about it, the way he puts it across. It's refreshing.
It's not even about golf, really. We just talk, it's so... It is. Like, once you get into it, it's just,
you know, when you're riding and especially on a race weekend, you'll be the same as me. Like, on a race weekend from Thursday or, Friday practice for you boys, no, same. So, you, you're locked in, aren't you? And you try and listen. You obviously try and improve over the weekend. You talk with your guys. You improve the bike, but you're like this. You
know? So blinders.
And sometimes after the weekend, it's nice to talk to someone, and they make you think, even if it sounds like a stupid question. Oh, in FP2, why? I seen in that session. What was you doing there? Why did you do that? You think, oh yeah, why did I do that? Then you think about it, and then even if it's one small thing, them small things, I think they help. You know, yeah. They help. Just think about it. Even if you gain nothing from it. Because you don't always look at it like that. You don't always analyze it in a new after the weekend. Normally, especially even the good things,
it'll say tough.
To me, what are you doing in sector 3? You was amazing there. I think, I was good there. I don't know why. I just felt all right.
Yeah. It's little, or if you're in that sector and you're pushing harder.
He said, shame about the other three where you were shit. But, sometimes you don't do that normally. I personally don't do that. After a good or bad race, I always try and look to the next race and think, you know, to improve on the last one and not focus on the negatives, but try not to do them again. And rather than looking at a bit more overview, I think, you know, in the end, when you're looking for small tenths of a second, small details, I think it's good to do that.
No, 100%.
What as we get to the end here, what is something you would suggest to kids or people just kind of coming up from England or from the US and you kind of your footsteps? What are some of the key things you feel?
Obviously, over the current, since COVID and the current times, it's difficult. It's really difficult, financially difficult on families, on sponsors, on teams. But I would always, and I've said this to a few people lately, it's difficult, but whatever you can ride in, whatever series you can ride in, and if you can try and get an opportunity, is always ride the most competitive bike you can. I think you're better off being in a worse series on a better bike than in what you perceive as a better series on a worse bike. Mm. Because you think, I don't know any examples, but to be on one level up in some ways, if you think it is one level up, and it's say from stock to supersport in England, for example, but you have to ride a bad bike in supersport, you think, yeah, but then I'm in supersport and I can be 10th, but no one cares who finishes 10th,
right?
In any class, I mean, but he's young, no one cares. You need to be in the front winning, and if you're a young kid and winning and enjoying it and riding your best and always respecting people because the paddocks are small. And a lot of young kids now are a bit, you know, there's a bit different generation. That sound really old when I say stuff like that. But you know, that little bit, I find out some people and I look at them and I think, is this guy for real?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He just comes in and I'm like, what?
Who the fuck are you?
Yeah. And I'm like, all right. who the fuck are you? Respect and just enjoy it, work hard, respect people, especially people that are working on your bikes or working with you. And try and be, even if you have to be in a class that you don't think is as good, but be at the front, because that's the way to move forward. And I feel like the only way to get opportunities and sponsors and better rides is by winning.
Yeah, we talk about that. Just, you know, even doing the bagger thing, it's like if you're at the front and you're winning, it doesn't matter what you're riding. You're riding a unicycle.
A win's a win, and there's other people in the race. They're trying to win.
Yep.
So if you're beating them, you're doing something right. And people see that. It's such a results-driven sport, and I would have probably done things differently looking back in some ways. But only time my career started going good was when I was winning, and that sounds stupid to say because you think, well, yeah, obviously that's for everyone. It's not, you know what I mean? It's not like I could have gone to Superbike 1 year before, or instead of going to like with Speed Up, I could have gone like maybe to Suzuki, but maybe I want to work. And I think my career would have been totally different. So I think that riding, anything good that's happened to me is because I've, especially when I've signed the deals, is because I've been doing well.
Yeah. I think it's hard. Like this year for me, going up to Superbike and Moto America from Superstock, the last couple of years, I've been on the podium almost every race, or in last year, like we won a lot of races, and then I'm going into a position now where it's like, I'm probably not going to win. I'm probably not even going to be on the podium. I mean, it's going to be very difficult just because of the level, because of the resources that it takes to even get there. And I think that's like the hardest part, I think, is people are so quick to jump up, but it takes so much to make those jumps. Yeah.
And I think as a rider, you have to sort of pick your battles. And I've got a mind coach I work with, and he's a good guy. But every weekend, and even just daily, but let's say every weekend, you need to know what's a win for you on that weekend.
Right.
Like for me in Argentina, after Saturday when I qualified 14th, I didn't lay in bed Saturday night thinking I'm going to win tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because, you want to win. I wanted to win. And of course, if I could have won, I would have tried to win. But that was the wrong thing to do because I could have made a mistake early. Okay, then it rained, so it was always different. But like, if it had been dry, I was thinking just get a good first three laps, build up, you know, aim for top five. Because it changed from where's Friday. Obviously, you're working hard to try and qualify then on the front row or front two row. So each day it changes. And I think the same going up for Superbike. You need to see how competitive the bike of the team is. Every year is different, isn't it? Every year is different. And you know, good thing is you've got two teammates.
Yeah, yeah.
So beat them. So they're already as good.
That's my main goal,
But not necessarily beat them every day, but at least you got a good gauge. Yeah. You know what I mean, it's not always about just winning,
right?
Because it's different in like a, you know, Red Bull Rookies or even Matter Two. Like we're all on the same bike, so you know at least I can train all winter knowing that as long as the team turn up, the bike is yeah. Is the same. At least the base bike is the same as the other guys. And that's nice to be in. In Superbike, talking to my brother and my experience over the years, is a bit different to that because the rules change all the time. Sometimes they suit other bikes. Sometimes the bikes are new, developing.
It so seems like the bike is so dependent too.
Yeah.
Like in Superbike. And
now everything's tight, real tight.
Yeah.
You know, look, MotoGP, what's up, it's tight. If you're yeah. on, so it's same at America. So if you're missing something, the bike's hot 6 months, 3 months, 1 month behind in development, you're not going to win the first race. Right.
Yeah.
And that's simple, isn't it? So it's just picking the
battles. I got a weird question. You say, we talked about it a couple times, you said Moto2 is like everything's the same. As I mean, they've got how many riders? 24? Is it 24?
There's 28 and there's 24 or 2 or something on Calix.
So, but now the engines, have you ever gotten a slow engine? Like, have you ever, like, has there ever been the, like,
only,
hey,
the only ever time I thought I did was in Barcelona Mugello last year. And I really struggled. And like, I'm not the most aerodynamic because I'm quite short. I know I look tall on it, but I'm quite short, right? And I'm a little bit wide. So, but my weight's good. So my weight, I'm 3.5 kilo over the weight limit because it's bike and rider, so it's nothing really. 3 kilos is... Nobody's on the limit because it's too risky. So the most somebody's 1 kilo. So I'm 2.5 kilos off the lightest guy. Is not bad. But my aero's not the best. But my bike's always quite good. I've never really been in a race and thought they've beat me because of the bike, especially the speed, because it is... They do a good job. Dorna, the Extern Pro, they do a good job. But last year, Mugello and Barcelona, I really struggled. Whatever to do with the gear and everything, I couldn't get it going. I don't know why.
That's pretty good though, that there's not like more it's discrepancy.
Really, it's really good. It, for that,
and there's like no blow up. Like you don't see any mechanical. No, you don't really see anything.
It's really, and it is good. On it, like you very rare. Like I said, just that one, them two races with the same engine because they were back to back. I felt a bit of something, but nearly never.
So what do you think? What was it? I think the first round, Acosta just seemed like he could just literally go right around people just because he's a little bit more aero.
Well, he's been fast all year, yeah. He's been, our team are looking into it massively. In Argentina, actually, so it's good that you said that. In Argentina, they had the photographer taking pictures from the side of the straight and they've had all the videos, like the aero and the measuring everything. Really? So, like I said, the team, they are on it. But he's a lot quicker than everybody else. Not just in the speed trap. In the speed trap, he's at the top.
It's visibly on TV.
On the speed trap, it looks close, but always there's always a sector that is normally one corner in the straight. Normally, it's like 15 seconds, 18 in Moto 2. It's always, or Moto GP, it's always like sector 2 normally, but it's a straight. And he's always top by like a tenth and a half, 2 tenths. Mm. And then like a tenth and a half in Moto 2, like it's like what, 2 tenths in one sector that's 18 seconds. Yeah. You're like, what? In Portimao, he was pole and he won. In 3 sectors, I was faster than him in qualifying. I qualified 9th. I didn't do it. My idea was a bit better, but because he was in the straight, but the bike's the same. So he's doing something good. But he's when you look at him from the side, his back, his screen, helmet, back is so flat.
He's at a good size height-wise right now, right?
He's good length. His back, so it
makes
it must be that because the fairing, you can't change Calyx after everyone's the same. The screen you can change, but the 2 options. So we all have the same because the other one's a bit lower. And he runs the high one.
You can't change like I mean, everyone's got to be on the same bearings, wheel bearings. Like, I mean,
yeah, these things you can change, but
I mean, but everyone's got to be on the same shit. Yes, but
my team would change up, like
you've looked into stuff, all that.
Yeah, like they've done loads. Yeah, so maybe they're doing something different, but not like
yeah. It looks like he's on a Ducati.
Yeah, some races he comes out, he's in his own lane. But he's fast and he's very clever at riding. He gets out the corner real good so as well, which helps. But yeah, at the minute they've got it dialed in the speed.
Yeah. Hmm. Getting back to what you were just talking about, you said very briefly that you're working with a mental coach.
Yep.
What is that? What has that done for you?
Well, I've worked with a lot over the time, over the last 10, 12 years. Worked with a few where I go into a room for the first meeting and for the first time, they look at you and tell you they can make anybody world champion, and so I'll just get up and walk out.
I've been in a couple of them, and you're like...
Yeah. Right. When I was in Aprilia, they made me go to one guy, spent a load of money and went, and I literally was in there like 3 minutes. I said, I can't work with this guy. Because you can't. If he said to me, I can make you the best you can be, I'd have said, thank you, let's try and do it. Not... He said, he actually said, I could make your mechanic world champion. He said that to me. And I went, oh, nice. Call him. Yeah. but with Craig's a good guy. And we do more, I would say, it's more training. It's all based around the idea of something called flow. If anything like it's flow, it's just about being in a state, focused state, basically. Like I said, a lot of stuff we do on the bike is without thinking, and it's just to help you get out your own way a little bit. You know, don't overthink it. Stay in the moment. Stay in the zone. Always be present when you're riding, because I have the my good days, and when I'm riding good and when I've done well, I'm winning. I'm at the front or doing well, or I potentially can win a lot of races. So I should think like that. But is just trying to put myself in that same position as much as possible. So a bit of breathing stuff, just to be relaxed, trying a bit of reaction things, a lot of
flick that switch.
Lot of reaction work before riding, also in the week, training with it. Just it's more about, staying in the moment, blocking it out. And it's actual, we do a lot of training, actual exercises and training with it. And that's helped me, because I felt like, I train, we test the bike, I train in the gym or running or whatever. And I think it's good to train the brain.
Yeah, 100%.
For me, the brain is, especially, like, we can all ride. Us, we can ride at a good level. So we can all win races. We all have done. So why don't we win every week?
Yeah.
It's not just that.
You can't
just think I'm the man and I'm going to win.
But if you had that maxed every weekend, how much better?
In my career, I've not done my best every weekend. Definitely not. Yeah, so I just think it's an area that you should work on. And I wish I'd have worked on it sooner, in this style of working, because like I said, I've worked in the past, but you sit and talk to somebody about your problems, but that don't help you on a bike.
Right.
Think positive. Yeah, we think positive. Think positive as much as you want, but if you're daydreaming down the straight,
you can't
miss the corner.
Yeah.
You
know
what I mean? Yeah. And how long is that? Is that in this year?
2020. Okay. So I'd start working with him in 2020, and that was my best year. One of my best years, nearly won the championship. So that was good. And 21 was good, actually. A few mistakes, but finished fourth then last year. I don't really count because... Yeah.
Hook, line, and sinker. Yeah,
did like 6 races or something.
You're in.
But he's a good guy. Good guy. Good because I feel like I can work hard at it and improve.
That's good. I know who he is. I think he messaged me once when I was
BSB. So it's good because it's something that, you actually have exercises to do rather than just sit and think about something. You know, we can do that all the time when you're on the fly or doing...
And sometimes thinking too is not the future.
No, I feel like, and we're all got that attitude. Your races, we obviously work hard. So giving something else to work on, you're happy to do it.
100%.
So I feel like you can make it forward. You happy to do it? He's happy to do it.
I think he is. That scared me. That's hilarious.
He's nuts, man.
Right, I think he's calling it. I think he's like, yo, this is it, big dog.
All right, you want to ask the question?
Yeah, I think so. This is my turn. So this is a good one. We do this at the end of every pod here.
I'm nervous.
Yeah. So if you
were in call it the casting couch for nothing.
Yeah. So if you were in a dark room, who would it? No. So you're on death row. We probably know what you've done. I don't know. What would you have done? What would you be in death row?
I don't know. Stealing a load of money, probably.
Okay. All right. So you're on death row for stealing a load of money.
Spending it.
There you go. And so what would your death row meal be? So food or food, drink, whatever. Like your last meal. What is it going to be?
It'd be a nice filet steak with chips and a DiSerrano and Coke.
From where? Home cooked or?
Restaurant.
Yeah, which one?
Ruth Chris Steakhouse.
In America, is that?
Ruth Chris, really?
Really? Not like Gaucho? Ruth Chris?
Yeah.
In England?
I don't even think I've ever been
there's
to
There's one
Ruth
in Austin,
Chris.
Actually. I might go this week. I won't go to, but you made me think about it now.
Why in America?
What do you mean, why in America? Well, it's a rhetorical question, I hope, because I don't want to be on death row.
No. It is. I'm just wondering, like we always
look how confused it is. What was yours?
I haven't sat down one yet.
Well, if you did, what would it be?
This is our podcast.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Hey, I'm the captain now.
It was, but I've been here an hour and a half, so it can be at mine as well.
No, that's cool. Would you have any dessert? Any sides?
I'd probably have a chocolate brownie with ice cream. Warm. The brownie, not the ice cream, obviously.
That's good. That's a good one.
No? Nah, dude, that's awesome.
No, I watched the weight.
Yeah.
Couldn't have any pie tonight, so.
Yeah, but why are you to watch the weight? You're on death row.
That's what I mean. That's why I'd have the brownie and ice cream.
I love it. Do you have to worry about weight?
A little bit.
Okay.
A little bit. Not terribly. The levers and everything's improving. Now we have levers are a bit heavy with the airbag, but we have a minimum airbag. We have to have, I think, is it 9 liters we have to have? 13? Mine's 13, I think, but minimum of 9. So all the kits are around 10, just under 10 kilos. And I think in our leathers and everything, if we're 72 puts us on the weight limit, and I'm about 76.
What is that in English?
That means you weigh what? 66,
67, 60, 68. I have to wait with you. Next week, I'll be 67. In pounds, you mean?
Yeah.
It's 2.2.
Yeah.
Times about 2.2.
It's like 150.
147.
Not far off, is it?
Pretty good. Well
you're tall. I remember I'm vertically challenged, so I can be like, what are you? You're tall, aren't you? So you'd be quite heavy.
I'm 165.
That's not bad then, is it? What are you? He'll be about 300.
Yeah. Yeah. Dude.
Seen him in his levers today, honestly. I was behind him. Tick. I shut off and I passed him still down the street. That's why I nearly ran off.
Just punching a big hole in the air. He's used to riding a bag, the weight don't matter. Yeah, that
he sits up, don't even pull the brakes.
He's got a six pack in each bag back there.
Oh no, 18 dude.
18 pack?
18 dude. Each side. Do you know what I mean?
Well, it's been really cool. We weren't expecting to have you on, but it's not too many opportunities to have
it's been
over
nice.
Here.
It's so. Nice to catch up with you both. And nice. Let's see how it goes. Keep up the winning streak.
You too. Let's go. Let's get
when's,
on it.
When's your next your first ride? Yeah, you didn't do Daytona. You're not racing yet this year.
Superbikes don't go to Daytona now. So
you're not doing Kota this year, are you?
Oh, we are, but not with you guys.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Not next week. Anyway,
Atlanta, right?
Yeah, Atlanta. We go. We test next week in Talladega, and then we're back here for a weekend, and then off to Atlanta.
Yeah.
So. Should be
all the best.
Should be good. Yeah. Hopefully.
Good start. Hopefully, world champ. We'll bring you back. Play some golf.
Yeah. If I'm world champ, I want a chocolate brownie rice.
Oh, 1,000%. And a Ruth Chris steak.
We know where we're taking you if you win the champ.
Yeah.
That's an easy one. wait. We can get a reservation there. I think. Yeah. All right, dude. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Perfect.